Welcome to ID the Future, a podcast about intelligent design and evolution.
Hello, this is Beatrice Frisou, your guest host for today's episode, part three of my conversation with Stephen Meyer, author of the New York Times bestselling book, Darwin's Doubt, and director of the Center for Science and Culture at Discovery Institute. In this portion of our conversation, Meyer provides practical advice for students in the sciences as it pertains to ID. And here's our conversation. So, Dr. Meyer, what advice would you give to someone considering a career in the sciences and aspires to be a scientist or a philosopher of science like yourself? And whether they have an ID view or not, so what would you tell to such a person?
Well, let me talk first to people that are interested in intelligent design, because there's a unique set of challenges if you want to get an advanced degree in one of those relevant fields and you hold an ID perspective. The default way of thinking in the sciences is not so much a commitment to Darwinism, but an underlying commitment to philosophical naturalism. And that's really not a scientific theory, it's a philosophical assumption. And so I think scientists who are thinking about doing a PhD or a master's degree in a scientific field, and they're intrigued with the concept of intelligent design or its explanatory power of intelligent design, need to be aware that intelligent design is challenging philosophical naturalism, and therefore it's implicitly challenging the belief system of a lot of people who may have a lot of power over one's future as you're trying to advance in academia. So that's just a dynamic that I think people have to be aware of. And oftentimes that means it's probably prudent to be somewhat cautious about sharing your opinions. I like to say be cautious, but not too cautious. Mm-hmm. Cautious in the sense that, first of all, it's not the job of the student to challenge a professor's belief system. The job of the student is to learn as much as he or she can about the subject at hand. Sometimes to be a student holding an alternative point of view, it's really incumbent upon the student to be even better than maybe other students have to be, because you have to know why you think the way you think, but you also have to know why the other people think the way they do.
And
you
have to have sort of,
you have to master both views, and you have to know what the evidence says as well. And so in being somewhat cautious, I think it's important also, it's important to be prudent. It's not the job of the student to try to convert the professor to their point of view. But at the same time, you want to make other connections. You want to be reading other things that are other than just the textbooks in your own field, maybe books about that same subject written from a different point of view. If you're doing some biochemistry, you might want to tap into what Michael Behe has written about biochemistry. If you're learning about information or probability theory, maybe be reading some good books by Bill Dembski. We have many, many authors now who are writing very good things about the sciences from an ID point of view. If you're an historian of science, you might want to tap into some of Mike Keyes' new works. So the part of my advice of the not being too cautious is that being careful not to relinquish your conviction simply because of peer pressure. Because once you get into a PhD program, there's going to be a lot of people that think differently than you do. You may not have that many people to talk to. It's important to make sure you're talking to other people and not only getting one point of view from within your PhD program. You have to learn the subject. You have to learn the facts. You got to be really good at what you do. You got to work hard. But you also need to be careful not to relinquish your view simply because of peer pressure. You might modify your view as you learn some new things, but you keep your, you know, hold fast to your principles and hold fast to your perspective and learn to defend it. But you might not want to practice defending it on your professors at this stage, because you are vulnerable until you get the PhD. So I think there's some of those kind of social dynamics are things students need to be aware of. Most students are. They're aware that they have to be somewhat cautious about how much of their perspective they reveal. So it's good to play your cards fairly close to the vest. But then on the other side of that, there's an equal and opposite peril. That is that sometimes when students get through, then they get their first job. And maybe it's a tenure track position. So then they say, well, I don't want to say anything until I get tenure, and then they get tenure, and then they don't want to say anything until they get their next research grant. And then, you know, the other risk is that you never make a difference in your field because you're always so guarded that you don't reveal who you are or explain to your colleagues why you think the way you think. Many of our ID researchers in various universities have found that when they share their viewpoint with other scientists in their department, that sometimes they get a very hostile reaction, and other times colleagues say, you know, I've always wondered about that myself. I'm skeptical about Darwinism too. Tell me more about this idea of intelligent design. So a lot of it is learning to read people too, and learning to read situations and reasoning on a kind of case-by-case basis about where you can make a difference by sharing your point of view, and where the better part of wisdom is to be cautious about what you share until the right time.
So what would you say out of all of, you did mention quite a few challenges, what would you say maybe the greatest challenges are for students today in academia?
Well, I think, you know, anytime you take on a hard, challenging major or area of study, that's going to be its own challenge right there. You know, if you're doing physics or biophysics or biochemistry or philosophy of science, these are all challenging subjects, but they're also rewarding. So the first and biggest challenge is just to do good work and really apply yourself. The second challenge is to be aware of these social and philosophical dynamics that are in play within the scientific community and within whatever smaller part of that community in which you may find yourself. So you need to be able to read people and read the dynamics, and don't feel that it's your job to, you know, be the skunk at the garden party, always creating a contentious environment in your grad school seminars. Sometimes it's good just to keep your mouth shut and do really good work. But also don't keep your mouth shut forever, because the world needs this message. We have, I think, a very compelling perspective with ID. It's a wonderful way of looking at life, and many of us happen to think it's true. So the truth is an important thing to talk about.
Absolutely. What advice would you have for a student that is working on their undergraduate, graduate, or even someone who's finished their studies that is already working in academia or in a company or a research lab in their field of study?
Well, we talked a bit about the PhD students. I think it's important for undergraduates too to have a sense of what their environment is like. I think undergraduates are much less vulnerable as far as if they ask questions or talk to the professors or ask about how the science and maybe their faith goes together. Professors seem to be a lot more tolerant at the undergraduate level. So I think the most important thing there is to be diligent in study. But also, if you're thinking about a career in science at any of those levels, one piece of advice I'd give people is to apply to our summer seminar. We're really interested in young aspiring scientists and historians and philosophers of science and social scientists, and helping them find their way in careers in those fields, and also in sharing and exposing them to a lot of evidence and arguments that may not get emphasized in their undergraduate and graduate programs. And we bring all of our best people in for the summer seminar, and it ends up being a really great 9 or 10 days. So it can be transformative for people. So that's another piece of advice I'd give is get to know us. Come to Seattle. Have a great time some summer with us and learn a lot about cosmology, physics, astronomy, biology, biochemistry, molecular biology, and the history and philosophy of science.
Yes, I must say it's a very nice time to be in Seattle during the summer. So one thing I did like about the summer seminars is that everyone is open to come and actually challenge some of the points in class. People from different perspectives can come and be free to learn, to study, to think the problems through themselves and ask challenging questions back to you and to the other speakers. So I really enjoyed having very, very good Q&A sessions where we can be honest and ask the questions, the hard questions. Thank you, Dr. Meyer, for giving your advice to upcoming scientists and philosophers that might find themselves at pivotal places in their lives to make decisions about their future careers. For ID the Future, this has been Beatrice Russo. Thank you for listening.
This program was recorded by Discovery Institute's Center for Science and Culture. ID the Future is copyright Discovery Institute. For more information, visit intelligentdesign.org and idthefuture.com.